inside. Oh, I love this bloke.
Well, Murray,
I loved him as a player.
He came over from Woodville. He ran upright on the wing. And he was one of those blokes who, when he got rid of it, if anyone wanted to keep going and accommodate him, he did not. He had red hair.
And the fiery mo.
Ladies and gentlemen, 122 games, 89 at Carlton, a few over at the Bullies. His name, of course, Phil Mailer.
Oh, great to have you here, Phil.
Thank you for having me.
Known as the Shark, but I think I always just called you Fabulous. I think we always went with Fabulous, I think.
Where did Shark come from?
Oh, it's not. It's actually a pretty boring story.
All right, moving on.
Let's get the boring ones out of the way then. Why Shark?
Be the judge of that, yeah. Phil?
Well, Dick Merton, who was head of the Carltonians, yes. When I first got to the club, he thought my last name was Marlon. He just went, let's call him Shark. So it's not for any devious moves.
No. But I thought it might have been some sort of play on words. I didn't realise it was just some old bloke who couldn't hear properly.
So how did you get to Carlton? I mean, the influx of players out of Perth and Adelaide from Carlton through the sort of late 70s and through the 80s is legendary, and you were one of those out of South Australia. How did Carlton's interest materialise with you?
Well, as Des mentioned earlier, I was captain of my club. I was 23 years of age. I played 110 games at Woodville. And I was on $700 a year at that point. Young family, mortgage.
$700 a year?
Yeah, $700 a year.
Was that in a lump sum? Or were they giving you
a year.
Yeah, a year.
What did they give you, the change from the behind the couch at the social club or something? were they paying you in that?
No, that was sort of, you know, was meant to be top dollar. But, you know, it was at that point in my life where, as I said, I was... you know, had a young family mortgage, and I just asked the president if we could maybe
up it
a little bit, because there was, you know, ex-Victorians coming over to play for us, and I'd given them what I thought was reasonable dough, or suspect it was reasonable dough.
Well, how much more than you?
Well, I think they were on like $5,000-$7,000 a year, so yeah. I just asked for a small increase, and that wasn't forthcoming. He said we had none left in the tank. So I had a mate
in the shark tank.
Nothing in the tank for the shark. Yeah.
So I had a mate who was worked for the Advertiser, and I didn't realise, but he was a scout for Carlton. So anyway, time elapsed, and Shane O'Sullivan, who was a recruit man at that point in time, said, you know, come over and have a practice match. So this didn't sort of respire till about February the following year. So the of 1980. And so I came over and had a practice match, and they took me into the committee room where, you know, Wes Loves was sitting, and Ian Collins and Percy Jones and Shane O'Sullivan, and they said, look, you know, you did all right today, and, you know, we'd like you to come over and play for us. And I said, yeah, no worries. And they said, look, we'd like to give you $16,000. I nearly fell off my chair.
Did you kiss each of them?
And I sort of looked a bit stunned for a minute. I was sort of adding it up in my head. Well, I'm on $700.
And doing the sums, trying to figure out what you could afford. You buy a suburb in Adelaide.
So I signed up there on the spot without sort of telling my family or anything, and flew back to Adelaide and told them, we're coming over.
What was the reaction at the club? Because I am fascinated a bit. We were talking outside. Younger people forget that in those days, the pinnacle for you was captaining Woodville and being in it. You weren't yearning to come over here. You weren't yearning to come to Victoria, because for you guys, local footy fans, everything was based around Adelaide, like as it was around Melbourne or around Perth.
Yeah.
But what was their reaction when you went back and said, they're going to pay me a little bit more than the $700 you guys are giving me?
They were astonished, and they were obviously pretty happy for me. But sort of in between that time in February, St Kilda had heard that I was on the go, so they also asked me to come over and play a practice match with them. And when I arrived at the airport and jumped in the car, Alan Killigrew was driving. He was one, Robbie Muir was in the back seat.
What, to convince you or make you sign?
He was actually coming to have a practice match with him also.
Oh, right.
And
how did that go?
Well, I looked at him, and he's a pretty scary looking bloke, just to begin with. And I'd sort of heard of him and seen him on TV, you know, Belt and Blokes and And anyway, I was just a little 23-year-old redhead kid sitting next to him. And Alan Killigrew didn't stop talking the whole way from Tullamarine to Moorabbin. But Robbie just said one thing to me. You know, he just said, "Hey, brother, don't come near me on the ground."
No worries,
Robbie.
Even though he's going to be on your team.
Good advice. Yeah,
so the Saints said, we can take the redhead mad guy, or we can take the really mad guy. So hadn't you signed with Carlton at that stage?
No,
that
I hadn't signed. This was before.
How'd that game go? What did Robbie do?
I didn't play too well.
Jeez, he's a bit of a sheepdog, that male.
No, I didn't go that well. And I never heard back from St Kilda either.
So you wouldn't have gone well in the practice game. Maybe you did personally, but I think that year of 80, Carlton, they didn't win a practice game for about 15 years, I don't reckon.
No, they didn't. And I didn't play in another practice match with them.
Right.
So I was still living at Adelaide on the Thursday night of the first game.
Mm.
So even though I was signed up to play with them, I was still in Adelaide on the Thursday night. And I was coming over to play twos football in the seconds.
Yeah.
And on the Thursday night, I got a call from Wes Lofts saying,
You're in.
You're in the seniors. Barry Armstrong had pulled out with an injury and he said, "You're in."
So you're in Adelaide when you get this phone call. You're playing Collingwood.
Playing Collingwood
at Vic Park.
What could go wrong?
Well, obviously I crapped myself. But flew over. Wes picked me up in his Porsche.
What, on the Friday or the Thursday night you come over?
On the Friday night.
Friday night, yep.
Friday night, and Wes picked me up in his Porsche and, you know, I don't think I've been in a car that went that fast before in my life.
Is your head spinning at this?
Because I owned a Kingswood. And I'm in this Porsche doing about 180 down Tullamarine. And we stayed at Wes's place that night, and he lived in this, it was an apartment in Toorak, but it was on the fourth floor up the top, and the doors opened up into his living room. And because I lived in Albert Park, which is not the Albert Park that you think of in Melbourne. You know, it was pretty rough neighbourhood, and I just thought, hey, I'm in a different world here. This is unbelievable.
So just very quickly, what was the family upbringing then? Was it working class there?
My dad worked for GMH for 40 years.
At Elizabeth out there.
Well, it was in Woodville at that point in time. Yeah, and my mum was a school teacher.
Right.
Yeah.
And were they still like alive?
They were alive.
They knew you were coming over.
Yeah. They wanted me to stay. Well, you're going over to play dirty Vic footy.
You said, "I'll see a penthouse and I'll get in a ride in a Porsche, Mum." So
before we get on to your first game and get too far away from Woodville and not be able to get back, did your time at Woodville correspond with Blighty's time at when he was there? Was Blighty there at any stage?
No, I took Ebor 13.
Yeah.
He left the year I started seniors.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, so he left in the end of 73.
Yep.
And I started in 74.
Okay, righto. So you get to the Friday night, you Lofsy away. So what did Lofsy make your breakfast the next day? Did he?
No, his wife did.
Righto. What did you give him?
She was a stunner too. Right. Absolute stunner.
I think we're all sitting here thinking, I wish I had Wes Lofsy's life all of a sudden. Sounds like he's living a pretty handy life.
No, we didn't have breakfast there. No. We jumped in his car about 9:30 in the morning, and he had to go get a shave and everything first. So I just sat, in one of the barber's chairs waiting for him.
God, this is ridiculous.
Doing his stuff.
Do you feel like the work experience kid just getting ready to...
Yeah, it was a bit odd, really, but that's the way Wes rolled, you know.
So did you have... Had they presented you with your jumper at this stage?
No. I hadn't met any of the players.
So this is Saturday morning. Wes is having a shave at 10 o'clock in the morning. You're playing Collingwood at Vic Park, bouncing the footy at 2:10. You don't even know what's the hostility that's going to come your way.
Did you rock up in the Porsche at Vic Park?
There's no way Wes is parking
there. He had a specific spot for it. There was like a designated area where he could park the car.
Who was he more worried about, you or the Porsche?
I think he was worried about the Porsche, to be honest.
So you rock up at Vic Park at, what, about 10:30 or 11 o'clock? What time did you get there?
Yeah, we probably got there about 12.
Yeah.
It was a lockout.
Oh, of course it would have been. First game of the year.
Yeah, no one could get in. It was unbelievable. There were just,
Well, you played the grand final the year before, so,
And all the Collingwood people were swearing at Wes, and I was just dagging on behind him like, with a footy bag in my hand. And
we're talking to Phil Malin. So you go into the rooms. You haven't met any of these blokes. This is a truly phenomenal experience. You go, How did you get introduced? What happened then?
Shane O'Sullivan introduced me to players. You know, this is Bruce Doyle, this is Mike Fitzpatrick, and of course, you know, they're g'day, how you going? But they weren't over the top on me because they were building themselves, getting themselves ready for a game. So yeah. I sort of just got changed, and you know, they started handballing the ball around, and you know, the noise level rises up a bit, and it's, you know, you can hear the crowd starting to go, and of course I'm getting more nervous and more nervous. And, you know, it's 5 minutes before running out and I didn't know what spot I was playing in.
Did you know
so
them even though,
coach.
Did you know though, given they were household names here, did you know them though? Did you know the players? Or
I knew of them, but as I said, I didn't follow VFL all that closely.
Yeah, you don't get to see them.
I knew that, you know, I knew they'd won the premiership and, you know, it was going to be hard to crack a game with them, but, you know, I got...
Not that hard.
Well, I got advice saying, well, you know, if you're going to make it in Victoria, you might as well play with the best side, which they were at that point in time, so...
But did you know about the legends? Did you know about, you know, you must have known about Dawley.
I knew how great of players they were, you know, looking from afar, but, you know, I didn't appreciate that until... obviously, being inside the club for the length of time I was.
So, 5 minutes before you run out, when did Purse, who was coach of the, and we'll talk about 80 a bit more on the way through, but so he's coaching that year. When did he first say, by the way, Phil, this is what I want you to do today? When did you get, can you remember when you got your first instructions from him?
Well, it was about 5 minutes into the first quarter.
So, you started on the bench, did you?
No, I started on the ground, but Shane O'Sullivan, I called Shane over because... you know, I was very nervous, I really hadn't met Purse, you know. And I said to Shane, mate, I don't know what spot I'm playing in. I'm running out on the ground. He said, what? So I saw him go over to Purse and, you know, I saw Purse throwing his arms around and Shane came back and said, you're on the wing.
Right. And the number 13, you obviously wore that in your days at Woodville, so you had no issues with the jinxed number.
No, very happy.
You were happy to have it?
Yeah, very happy.
So did they know that you had the number 13 over there, or did you just happen to be available
they asked,
to you?
They asked me what number would I like if I could get it, and I said, well, I'd like 13.
Yep.
Yeah, and it fell in.
So we've heard these stories. Des and I have never done it, but we've heard these stories about what it's like to run out as a non-Collingwood player at Victoria Park. What's it like to run out as a non-Collingwood player at Victoria Park?
It's an amazing thing, you know. Like, I think probably AFL footy lacks that, you know, that real home ground advantage. Now I understand why you can't play at these grounds anymore, but it was just an amazing feeling. Even though, you know, like, you know, they were spitting and, you know, swearing at you and all that, it was still one of the best feelings I've ever had in my life, to be honest.
So when your ball goes out of bounds and you'll track the ball over to them and it's in the gutter and you have to use the fence to pull yourself up, do you get, is it the abuse? Like, can you remember the noises that have come back at you?
And a lot of people say I lie when I say this, but one old lady actually spat on me. I had to get the ball off the, it was in one of the you know.
Yeah, the concrete gutter,
Concrete gutter, and she just leant over and let one go on me.
I think
she had the flu too.
You thought, I know I'm getting 16 grand now. This is who was the first bloke to test you? Who was the first one to lay one on you or sort of shape up?
Woosha Welsh was pretty good from Richmond. Yeah. He was in your face a bit, and I loved playing against Woosha. But my first possession was in that game. It was about 5 minutes in the first quarter. Curly Austin got the ball. I ran down from the wing half back. He hit me on the chest with a beauty, and I went to play on, and Peter Moore was there. He just grabbed me, holding the ball, goal to Collingwood. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a long day here.
So that tempo, did that take you a little while to adjust to, or did, by the end of that first game?
About 5 minutes.
Yeah, you reckon? No, seriously. You're obviously you're a high quality player.
Thank you.
But
you had 19 touches for the day.
And you kicked a goal. They win by 8 or 7 or 8 goals. Jono kicked 7.
7, yeah.
Off the back of this horrible preseason form where people are going, oh, Carlton are gone. Last year was a flash in the pan. They won't be defending. But was there a time when you thought, okay, I'm in the flow here, I've picked this up? Can you remember a time when, you know, you made in your own mind the adjustment to VFL footy?
Not really. I felt comfortable, and I think the thing about it was that I was in a pretty good side.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, I reckon if I'd have gone and played at Fitzroy or St Kilda. Not, I'm not degrading those sides, but at that point in time, I think I would have found it pretty hard.
You became a part of a pretty good machine, didn't you?
Yeah. No, I was just a small cog in what was, a magnificent, what I regard as, the best team Carlton's ever had.
Oh, no doubt. Well, 3 and 4 years,
You should have won four.
Who knows? I mean, 80 was there to be won and things happened. Well, let's talk about that on the other side of the break. And 81 and 82 and the move to the Bulldogs and your commitment to footy thereafter continued at VFA level and suburban level. Phil Malins, our really special guest in. There's a lot to talk to him about. Can I just wrap up 9 and 80 before you get on to your next thing that you want to do?
Yes, let's do that.
We'll get to 81 and 82 and the rest of you. But what do you reckon happened in 80? Your first year, so you're probably just there to play footy and you're not getting too caught up in all the politics, but it was a heavy-duty political year at the Carlton Footy Club in 80. What's your memories of what happened?
Well, it was, looking back I didn't have a lot of, expert coaches through my career in South Australia. But looking at Percy, looked like he was busting his butt, to do the right thing by the club, and he'd been thrust into the position. Mm. I don't think that he was ready to coach, to be honest. And I'm pretty sure there were blokes behind the scenes that were coaching the side.
Yeah, right, okay, yeah.
And Percy was basically the mouthpiece, if that's what you could call it. I got on well with Percy, but...
Lovely man.
We probably, as I said, I don't think he was mentally ready to take on the mantle of coaching the side in that year.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what led us down in finals when it counted. Because I honestly thought we were the best side in 80.
Yeah. Because you got touched up, didn't you, in the finals?
Out in straight sets.
So how big a difference did... And again, this is not to... denigrate the work that Peter Jones did for the footy club, but how big a difference did it make when Parker arrived in 81?
Oh, it was a complete transformation. Mm. And once again, we're talking about a bloke who was thrust into it for the first year, and David Parkin, who had all this experience, and coaching successful sides, before coming to us. Parker was just staggered at when he walked in the doors at Carlton. He was staggered.
By what?
He just couldn't believe, the amount of alcohol and the partying that we used to do. He's just flabbergasted.
Well, we've got to get onto that too. We've got to get onto that also. And just to give an insight into the chat we had at the break, you came over, $700 at Woodville. They offered you $16,000. You nearly wet yourself and fell over. How much were they willing to offer you, did you find out later?
Well, I spoke to Wes, a couple of years later, obviously, but I spoke to Wes and he thought I'd come in and say, 38,000, 39,000. And they would come down to about 30,000. So. But I got him back on my next contract.
Yeah, well done.
You didn't
hear
any high fives as you left the room. And they went, my God, he's an idiot, that bloke. He can play footy, though. And so you've settled into the club. You mentioned Parko was astounded at the social life that was enjoyed at the strongest club going around at the time. What was that? Tell us about, because we've heard from Sellers has been in. He's told us about Alex Marcoux. What are your memories of those? Because you're a family man. So were you with Robert
Klomp? That's what you call it.
Were you with Robert, were you with Robert Klomp drinking mineral waters in the corner? Or what was going on?
I could drink Klompy under the table any day. We train pretty hard, and because I'm an avid SEN listener, and I listen as much as I can on the radio. And I heard Scotty Lucas the other day. I'm not sure what show he was on SEN, but he mentioned, referring back to the 80s, that we only trained 2 nights a week. We trained 4 nights a week. We busted our boilers back in those days. Parkin trained us pretty hard.
And worked? Were you working?
Working full-time.
As in finance?
This was early 80s. I was actually working for Rothman Cigarette Company.
Yeah, right.
So I had a few little chuffers. still do. So we'd train Monday night, which was a skills night, and then Tuesday night, without fail, we'd have match practice. And I mean full on.
Yeah, right.
Not no tackling or, working out game plans, just full-on. Hour and a half, 2 hours of match practice.
Mouth guards in, sort of stuff.
Fully on. Mixed senior versus reserves, just on.
Yep.
And then we'd train Wednesday night, then we'd train Thursday night, we'd have Friday night off, and obviously play Saturday, and then train Sunday. So, we were long days, long nights, and we were doing all the right things. And what I admired about the group that I became, you know, adjusted to and had to live up to that standard was they trained exceptionally hard as I've ever trained in my life.
Yeah,
was training with them. But then, you know, we'd after training, you know, Parker would say, "Yeah, get home" and all that sort of stuff, because we'd end up at the Fenwick till about midnight. Just having a couple of quiet hours, having a talk about things.
Who became your mates then? Who did you sort of, because you talked about that you knew no one, even when you were playing that first game at Vic Park.
When I first lobbed, obviously my family hadn't, they were still living in Adelaide, so I lived with Mark McClure.
Oh, dear.
Which was...
Oh, dear.
Oh, that's sensible.
Which is a great initiation.
What,
a club
Robbie,
life.
Robbie Muir didn't have any room at his joint? Or?
No, I didn't bother about Robbie.
No.
But I live with Mark Sellers down at his house in Brighton. And
tell us any? We've heard some stories about some of the houses that blokes have lived in on the way through.
I can't tell too many stories, to be honest. But I know that he had right away of all the club scene, where, you know, King Street used to be lined right back to get in.
Yeah.
Well, after one game, I think it was our second game, you know, Sellers said, "Come on, we'll go out. I'll take you out on the town." And we went to, I'm not sure, the Underground.
The Underground.
And there was a big lineup of people. And I said, "Sellers, this is going to take us hours to get in, mate." He said, "No, it won't. Just follow me." And he walked up and these big heavy bouncers are at the door. And he just gave a nod and he pointed back to me, the little fella. He said, "He's with me." So I just sort of wandered in behind him. Next minute there was this, it would have been 15 women just all gathered around Sellers and sort of knocked me back, you know.
In the rush.
So I sort of just, you know, sat there and had a couple of quiet beers.
And thought to yourself, you're not in Woodville anymore, little fella.
Exactly.
No. So who, I mean, you played with, and I use the word rogues in the most respectful and polite way you can use it. You played with some great characters at the Carlton Footy Club and at the Footscray, when you went to play at the Footscray for a couple of years. Most notable amongst those, I reckon, would have been Dougie and Steve McPherson. They would have led that little band of rogue characters at the Western Bulldogs. You played with some of the great characters and personalities of those two clubs, potentially in the history of those footy clubs.
Yeah, and I not that we can be like that in today's football, and I understand that, but back then, I think the larrikins of the game, we had our fair share at Carlton.
Yeah.
You know, we had more larrikins than non-larrikins
yep,
there.
Yep.
You know, we had, three quarters of the side were larrikins.
Yep.
But what I think, what that personality in playing football, I think, is that they take risks. They have a strong mindset.
Self-belief, obviously. Yeah.
All of those things come with, I think, a larrikin in sport. Now, you can go over the top, you know, I'm not talking between larrikin and criminal, but, you know, even though a couple of them didn't get criminal in the end, but they took that step one too far.
I love the caveats on the end of half of your sentences, Phil. They're great.
But I think that's what made us a pretty good side.
So on that, I mean, you've been around footy, you know, you went on to become an assistant coach and the chairman of selectors of the Bullies, and you've stayed involved in suburban footy, you know, for a lot of your life outside of play. Have we gone too far? Do you reckon KB, in the last couple of days, has been talking about there shouldn't be a buy. There shouldn't be a buy in footy. It should be, you know, attrition and the ability to test yourself through a season. You train four nights a week, as you told us, and you all had to carry jobs and had your family lives and your social lives on top of it. It wasn't easy being a professional footballer back in the 80s, by the sounds of it. Do you reckon we've gone too far in, you know, sanitising the game?
Yeah, sure, I do. I don't think we need a break. I think if, players are, you know, sore or whatever, surely it's up to the club to manage that. You know, and don't train them, give them a light week or give them a rest if they have to. But, I hated this weekend, to be honest, because there wasn't enough footy on.
Yep.
You know, and I like that it should be up to the clubs to manage their players, not the AFL.
So what about if a young bloke, like Teddy Richards is listening to this, who was pretty outspoken the other night about this, what if he says, Phil, you don't know what you're talking about. You're a dinosaur, mate. You know, you don't know what it's like to be a player.
Not to put words in Ted's mouth.
You, but you know what? You know, there would
he's
be,
half right.
There, no, but there would be some young blokes out there listening. And I'm with you, by the way, but not that we've never played at the elite level, but I'm with you and I'm with KB on this. But the young players of today, they don't see it that way. What do you say to them?
Look, it's just the era we were brought up in. You know, like the 82 grand final, on grand final day, there were more blokes in the medical room than there were waiting to be spoken to by Parkin. You know, needles getting jabbed into groins. Yep. And you know, I'm not trying to, you know, build up myself, but I played 82 with a groin that would probably now be called that osteitis pubis.
Yeah, right.
And you'd have 3 months off with it. But that's just how it wasn't like that. You know, like if someone missed training or you squibbed it on something, the rest of the players would just be down on you.
Yeah.
You know, like you had a standard to set, and if you didn't make that standard, you weren't in the group. But now I think the way that footy's going and, you know, medical science and, you know, rehabs and all those sort of things, I think now, and it starts in under 18 football.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's just the way the players are conditioned now. It's not their fault. It's just what they've been brought up with.
Yeah, but yeah. Phil, I reckon if you weren't allowed to go to the Fenwick 3 nights a week with Sellers, you would have been begging for a week off mid-year to let your red hair down, surely.
But that's what, you know.
We've got plenty of time to do that.
Oh, premierships. There's such a lame question you ask, oh, they must have been a great memory for you. 81, 82. Is there something from either of those games that you particularly look back on with particular clarity or fondness, something that you've taken away from either of those two games?
I just thought 82, you know, we were, you know, at one stage during the year there, we looked like we weren't even going to make the finals. Mm. I think Sydney had walloped us, and David Parkin wrote us all this letter, individual letter to all of us saying, you know, you're a part of the side, you're a key member, you know, you've got a lift.
It's a different letter for every player.
Yeah, different letter for every player.
And, handwritten or typed?
Handwritten.
Yep.
You know, I'm not one for all that sort of stuff, to be quite honest. I think if you play, you've got to play. You know, you don't need to be motivated. But for some strange reason, from that point on, you know, we just became a different side again. And we ended up making the finals, and you know, Richmond had absolutely belted us in the first final.
Yeah, yeah.
And then for us to come back, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, for a lot of blokes to be pretty sore, and we kicked, I think, the first 3 goals in the first 2 minutes or something of that game.
It was an unbelievable start.
Then there was a massive fight. And then there was the...
Where were you in that?
I was on the outside. I didn't get involved in those. And then there was a streaker. Yeah, you know, the game had everything. And then I kicked a goal, which, you know, that was my first goal in a grand final. So, you know, that's a really fond memory for me. And it was at a time in the third quarter where we got us back in front. And, you know, so, yeah, it was just a fantastic feeling.
I remember you at some stage turning around and giving the two-fingered salute to someone. I can never work out who it was.
Yeah.
Who was it?
Well, that was in about the first minute of the game. That was... The ball went forward and I chased after it, and Mark Lee, dirty big Mark Lee, if he'd have hit me, he would have knocked me in the next week. But he stuck the big elbow out and just missed me by an inch.
Yeah.
And I sort of just gave him the...
Cop that.
Yeah, cop that one, yeah.
You missed me.
Yeah, so that was good. It was a good start.
You runner up in the BNF that year, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah. I actually only lost by one vote. Jimmy scored 2 votes. I was 1 in front. And Jimmy scored 2 votes in that game to pit me in the BNF. Yeah,
that's something. And I mean, you win a side that's won its third premiership in 4 years, a super team like seriously, Richmond and Carlton. There were champions on every line in both of those sides. But to almost win the BNF in a team that was that established and that good, that must be, even though you didn't win it, that must be a great source of pride for you that you were.
Yeah, it was. I think that year I played midfield. I didn't play on the wing at all.
Ruck Rove that year, didn't you?
Yeah, Ruck Rove the whole year. And I didn't play on the wing until the very last game. Parkin wanted me to play on Wood,
yep,
who had played pretty well during the final series. And, so I think I enjoyed playing on ball the best. That's where I played sort of all my junior career. And at Woodville, I played on ball the whole time.
Yeah.
And 82, I played on ball, and I felt the most comfortable playing in that position.
What did your footy card say? Utility? Or you would have been one of the last. The utilities died out after that.
You would have been a ruck rover, wouldn't you?
I think they'd listed me down as a ruck rover.
So, Phil, what happened? But 2 years later, like 84, yeah, I think it was, you're gone from Carlton. What? And you've gone to the Western Bulldogs, or Footscray as it was back then. What happened?
Well, I had both my ankles reconstructed in 83, and started tearing hamstrings. And, you know, I think as a team, we probably dropped a cog, you know. Things probably, not that a lot of blokes will admit it, but, you know, I certainly do, that wasn't as important.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And I can be honest looking back saying that, even though, you know, I tried my best, but, you know, there's best and there's best.
Yep.
And at that point in time, it was pre-season, and I tore my hamstring again, and it was at the point where the salary cap had come in, and Carlton were chasing Reece Jones, David Reece Jones, and...
couple of to go.
Did Wes pull up in the Porsche and say, we're heading over to the Western Oval? We might as well finish it as we started it. Or did you catch the bus over?
No, I was at home one night. It was probably, the middle of Feb, late Feb. I was home one night and I got a call from David Parkin. Now, you do not get a call from David Parkin at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night. So I knew he wanted to come over and see me. So... yeah, he came over and just...
It's like the mafia, isn't it? You go, make it quick. Just make it quick and painless.
Yeah, I knew before he got there what he was coming for. So,
how did he put it? How did he word it? You've been a great servant to the club.
Well, I can't remember. I can't remember what I did last week, Des. But...
so once he starts talking to you, does the thing, you know what he's saying. Does the thing become a bit of a blur? Are you a bit shattered at the time when he's saying
no,
that?
No, funny enough, I wasn't.
Yeah,
I wasn't shattered because, you know, I hadn't played well. I knew I wasn't playing well.
You strike me as a realist. You're not... You weren't living in a fantasy world.
No, definitely not. I was 28, 29 years of age. You know, I knew I was slowing up a bit. I knew everything. You know, my body wasn't as great as what it used to be. So, but I still didn't think I was finished. So the next day, I rang Shane O'Sullivan, and
he was at Footscray at the time.
He was a general manager.
Yep.
And 2 days later, I was signed up at the Dogs.
And what was Mickey like? I mean, Mickey had just started at this stage. You know, we know what he's gone on to achieve as a coach, but he was in his early stages. He was aggressive and bristly and full of all the fire that he had. What did he say to you, and what did he require from you when you first had your chance to meet him?
That was, I think, his second year or first year.
It might have been second, I reckon.
He was sensational.
Yeah.
He was a real man's man.
Yeah.
You know, he told it straight down the line. He didn't ever come to me when I got to the club and said, this is what we need from you. Just, g'day.
Yep.
You know, he knew what I'd done, and, you know, I'd been in a pretty good side and had good values. And so away we went.
Yeah. And there's some super talent at that footy team. I mean, they never went on to achieve, you know, the ultimate that you achieved at Carlton. But, gee, there's some good players in that. I mean, Doug Hawkins, of all the players you played with, Phil, and you played with some superstars at Carlton and obviously some good players back home, pound for pound, you know, where does Dougie sit amongst all the players that you played with against?
Right up there. Yeah. Right up there. And once again, you know, like, I make the comment, if I'd gone to St Kilda, would I have played 100 games, or would I have only played 1 year, or would I have only played 10 games? I'm not sure. If Doug Hawkins had played at Carlton, he would have won 3 Brownlows.
Yeah, it's as simple as that, isn't it?
Yeah, he was a superstar.
Yeah. And the differences between the two clubs, I know we're running out of time, but the differences between the two clubs, was it stark?
Yeah, very, back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, our number one ticket holder and sponsor was Richard Pratt. The Doggies had the plumber from Deer Park as a major sponsor.
You had the Blue Bloods, they had the Hyde Street Band.
Yeah.
I remember people always saying, was it John Elliott used to go around and just slip everyone 50 after a win at Carlton to have a drink?
That was a Carltonians.
That was a Carltonians. And at Footscray, they would have asked you for 20 if they could borrow 20.
Make sure you ask him about match committee every Monday at the Crown Casino with the Dogs. When you're chairman of selectors down there, is that where you had the match committee, was it? I won't say who sent that text message.
Well, I've got a fair idea who sent it. Preface that by saying we did start work at 6 o'clock in the morning on Mondays.
Right. That's early to be getting to the casino.
No, we used to train the boys up and we sort of had a little bit of a match committee at the club, and then we'd wander off to the Crown because that bloke that sent that message had one of those Crown cards back in those days.
Did he really? Right.
Which gave his carte blanche to any restaurant or any bar in the whole Crown. So obviously we took advantage of that for about 6 or 7 hours on a Monday.
Of course, of course you did. You were going to ask him about this
cab
other thing.
Cab home, too, by
the way. My word. You're going to ask him about the...
Virtually Forgotten Legends.
Oh, this
you started your
thing,
own...
Yeah.
It was a precursor to JYB, basically. It was just ex-AFL football, VFL footballers. Virtually Forgotten Legends.
Yeah, it was started by Peter McConville, Alex, Mark Ewell, and myself. It was just... We just wanted, blokes who were in their own business. The criteria was you had to be in your own business and you had to have played VFL. So we sort of sent out these emails to, Dennis Banks and all these other blokes. Would they like to be in a club where we meet once a month, bring along guests, get guest speakers.
Network a bit
and,
raise some money for charity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how it started. So there was only 20 of us were members of the club, and we'd each bring 10 guests along and we'd, go to different venues and, of course we'd get some good guest speakers. We had Teddy Whitten one day and then blokes of that ilk would speak to us. And then it sort of grew and grew and grew to what it is today, which is, we have a pre-grand final luncheon and we get like 2,000 people to the luncheon. It's just unbelievable. It's fantastic.
Phil, we've got a minute to go. We're going to scratch the surface here. The premiership at Springvale, of all the things you did in footy, how highly does that, in terms of the pride that you take out of things you've been part of, where does that sit for you?
Oh, about an inch below the AFL ones.
It meant a lot to that footy club, didn't it?
Yeah, it was their first ever.
Yeah.
They were on the brink of getting demoted to second division. They'd finished second bottom in first division the year before. I think you had Emmett Dunn on.
Yeah, we did a few weeks ago.
Emmett,
yeah.
We recruited Emmett and myself came to the club and Paddy Foy.
Yep, yep.
Paddy Foy's the one that got... when that Berkey
got... Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah.
Paddy Foy's the one he pushed over first up. That's his claim to fame, old Paddy. But he was a really good player for us, and we went from second bottom to winning the premiership.